like nothing different.
Yeah. You're spending a lot more to live exactly the same.
Oh, Billy fell out. We've just gone live.
And we're live.
See if we can get him back in. This is Value After Hours. I'm Tobias Carlyle. This is Jake Taylor. We're short the prodigal son. He'll be back in a moment.
Perfect technical difficulties for our 200th episode.
On brand, on brand.
Totally
Here
on
he goes,
brand.
the prodigal son returns. He's on mute.
There he
All
is.
right. He's back.
I'm happy that happened. It would be a shame if given
Can you
our,
imagine no technical difficulties?
yeah,
Little do
that would
people
not be
know.
us. That would not be us at all.
Billy's broadcasting from New Digs, the prodigal son.
That's right. Returns.
Where are you now?
I'm at my crib, man. So I'm in the office.
Beautiful. It's good to see you,
So
my man.
it's nice to be here.
So what's
I was making my cider jokes. That was cracking me up last week, man. I guess that's a real drink in Florida or in Australia. Dick and cider.
Yeah, but the joke came first.
Yeah, no doubt. But it's a 3-star drink, so people buy it and they say it's reasonably decent.
Out of how many stars?
Well, that's a
10.
good question. Anyway. Yeah, I don't know. Nice to be here. I thought I was going to be on last week, and then I signed on. I was like, oh my God, I don't know what's going on. And then I saw the tweet that John was on, and I said, oh, that's good for the fans. They can wait one more week before they have to have me.
Yeah, keep them hungry.
JT's just come back from Columbia in New York.
Yeah, not
Oh.
Bogota, Colombia, but yeah, Columbia
The
University.
university.
Noted. I want to
Yeah.
go to Columbia, Columbia.
I
What
don't
was the
know.
event?
It's the like a student investment association thing that,
CISMSA or whatever?
yes, yeah, SISMA that they do
Yeah,
all
there
the
you go.
pretty
Who's talking?
regularly.
Any good speakers?
Yeah, you had John Griffin from Blue Ridge. He's kind of one of the ex-Tiger guys. They've been pretty successful. Mo Boson did an interview with him. Who else? Oh gosh. Sally Krawchuk, is that I think how you say her last name? She's been in a lot of different finance positions over the years. She came in over a Zoom that was pretty, I felt like she was pretty candid and forthright about her career, and that was interesting. Yeah, I had to duck out for a little while, so I missed some of the stuff. But you know, caught up with some old friends, and it's good to kind of be in the value community, sort of where it, I feel like that's a little bit ground zero in a lot of ways, where Graham was teaching many, many years ago.
Any good takeaways? Any good learnings make benefit glorious nation of value after ours?
Yeah. I know you're sworn to secrecy in the room, but
Yeah, you know, I mean it's all the same stuff, guys. I mean, you're not missing anything, I guess
buy
is what I
cheap,
would say.
pray.
Yeah. Buy cheap, understand what you're buying,
Grab at thy ankles.
have patience. All the same stuff.
It's been a pretty good run for growth over value since the start of the year and you know the year before that and the decade before that. But I thought we had a little bounce yesterday, but then I
Gave it
switched
all
on the
back.
machine and more this morning.
Yeah, why does a CPI print that's a little hot come right after you if you're a value guy? Where's the connection there?
Yeah, I can't figure it out either. It seems like good news is good for growth and bad news is bad for value, and I don't know.
I think that value, from what I have seen lately, is screening a little bit more industrial. So maybe if there's hot CPI, the theory is the Fed doesn't cut and things slow a bit. Maybe. But I
Okay.
don't know that I believe that, but that would be what I would think.
I would think that longer term, longer dated cash flows that might be more representative of a glamour basket would be a little bit more interest rate sensitive if you imagine that rates were going to be moving up.
Maybe I don't the S&P I would argue probably has more pricing power, so I'm not sure. My official position on the S&P is that I don't think it like is objectively bubbly. I don't think you can own it and expect more than 1 to 3% real. But like, if you're living in an existence where wealth disparity is as big as it's ever been, you only have to get wealthy once. If you want to protect it, I can understand being in the S&P. I just don't think you're going to like do what you did.
Yeah. Toby, give me an update on where profit margins are these days. I think we saw.
Well, there was a little chart out. I think they peaked at 13.1%. I think 2021, I should have a quick look at that. But they are mean reverting. It's the slowest mean reversion in the series
Well,
ever.
dude, even if they're, I mean,
They
even
came down
if,
to like 10, right? Is
yeah, they're
that
down to 10. It's catastrophic.
where were they in 2019?
So here we go. I have it up. This is from Charlie Bolello. So they got to 12.1. That was sort of late 2018, early 2019, fell to 5.9 at the trough of the COVID
We can look through that whole thing.
crash.
That's you
Bounced to
almost have to
13.
look through the peak though too, because
13.5 was the new peak post. That was the, and so now we're back to 10.7, 8.9 being the long run average going back to, well, 2000.
Yeah. Well, 1 to 10.7, that matters.
Yeah.
13.5 to 10.7.
I mean, if you're more on your way to 6, that's really gonna matter.
Well,
Yeah.
8.9, the new normal since 2000.
Yeah, I still, well, I know this is an intangibles, returns of scale. We've had all these arguments already before, and tax cuts. I think corporate America is taking a pretty good bite out of the total pie at the moment. And that's, who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, does Labor get its due? It seems like unemployment's pretty tight.
Yeah.
You get any movement in the other direction, that would seem to be bad for Labor, wouldn't
And it depends on robots.
Pay higher interest rate costs, have taxes move the other way potentially for you, maybe back up to 20, 23 again, or
Who's gonna
35.
do that though?
I don't
Well,
know.
I don't think this is controversial to say. Neither party, I think, is really willing to take pain unless they absolutely have to. And then they can come together and they seem to get stuff done in crises. But
I think.
Biden could come back in and say, we're running massive deficits. These are unsustainable. The top end of town has to do its part. We're going to increase taxes on corporates and high income earners.
Aren't the think tanks in his party basically saying we're running massive deficits and inflation's not a real problem, so we can continue to do it? Like, isn't that the intelligentsia right now?
Is that MMT, like Kelton and those guys?
Yeah.
I don't really follow. I don't understand how that stuff works.
I don't either. I
If you
do.
did, we'd have to question your sanity. If you're
We
not
give some
confused, you
shout-outs.
don't know what's going on.
Pants Party, first in the house, Petah Tikva, Israel, happy 200. Thank you. Toronto, Miami, Dead Cat Gully, New South Wales, me too, brother. Happy 200th, fellas. Birmingham, Alabama, not England. Norberg, Sweden. Valparaiso. KOTOR, Montenegro. Grimsby, Ontario. Monterrey, Mexico. Santa Monica. Jupiter, Florida. What's up? Yeah, it's nice in Jupiter.
Shout out to Jupiter.
Milton
That's a good
Keynes,
place.
Castleford, England. Savonlinna, Finland. Poland, Cleveland, Tennessee. Kennesaw, Georgia. London, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Winter Park, Florida. Tallahassee.
My God.
Lachlan Argo.
Dimey
Galway.
Pevo,
Like a bit of the Galway pipe, the drink. Brookings, South Dakota, Highland Park, Illinois, Hartwell, Georgia, Chapel Hill, what's up? Durham, Cardiff, Wales,
keep this going
Vaughan,
for a second. I'll
Wales,
be right
Toronto,
back.
Philly.
Yeah, let me know when you're done.
I
I'll
think
be
I've got them
back.
all. I think I got them all. Clungaville, Scotland.
Where's
Scotland, the brave.
Bill
Bangalore, India.
scurrying off to? Did get a shot at those calves, though, on the way out the door.
He did show off the cars. We're going to have to mark this one not for kids.
Yeah, not safe. Those are.
What a. And Winnipeg. Sorry, I missed you guys. Hang on. Billy's back with a dog.
He's brought a dog back. That's good.
Yeah, so here's a good question. I've been thinking about this one a little bit. I don't have an answer, but I'll throw this question out to you
I
guys.
forgot.
Yeah. Oh, you got the glasses? Oh, actually, I have some. I got my hundreds too.
Oh.
Still here.
Yours is probably in a box somewhere, Billy, since you moved, I know, so.
Here's a good question. I like this one. Do you guys have any hypothesis for what the effect of the bifurcation between monetary policy tight and fiscal policy loose could have on different sectors of the economy? I've been thinking about this a
Ooh,
lot. I still don't have an answer, but
it's a great
I think
question.
it's a good question.
It's a very good question.
That's a good question.
And I wish I
Anybody want to
had
have a go at it?
an appropriately strong answer to that.
Mid-flight to Jamaica.
All right, well, so I think here's my answer. Is it I think that fiscal or monetary policy is able to get into the nooks and crannies of the economy more through the transmission of interest rates, and that, but it's also much more broad based. It's like taking an antibiotics pill as opposed to a topical application, which I think the fiscal policy is a little bit more targeted, but also probably more susceptible to crony capitalism as well, where the first pigs at the trough get to get those dollars before anyone else, and so you get those Cantillon effects where you get the dollar before it gets weakened. So there's a political element to it there, but I would say that yeah, there's probably the arguments that that same thing happens with the fiscal side or the monetary side as well, where the banks are the first ones at the trough at the Fed's, when they're dumping. You could basically borrow money for free, buy treasuries, collect the spread, and we just like sort of give resources away. But yeah, I think probably banks benefit more from the monetary, and then the subsidy truffle hounds get more at the from the fiscal side of things. What do you guys think
Yeah,
about that
that's a good
analysis?
answer. That's a good answer.
It's just off the top of my head.
That was a
I
good
don't know that
answer.
I agree
Yeah.
that banks benefit the most, but I don't disagree. I just need to
From
think about it.
loose monetary policy.
Yeah, I don't
Because
know.
banks are first in line. He's saying we're tight monetary policy and fiscal spending is going to be the truffle hounds,
Yeah.
the subsidy truffle hounds.
Yeah, that could be.
I don't know
I
what to
don't
answer.
know. I the thing that keeps me up, well, I'm not actually staying up thinking about this, but the thing that I wonder a little bit is our current, it seems to me, the current iteration of our economy is fairly strong data with tight monetary policy, and it is unclear to me why, if I were at the Fed, I would cut until jobs started to crack a little bit. And I kind of wonder, a lot of this inflation data has a lot of benefit of rent that's flowing through. And if you look forward to 2026 and 2027, there's not a lot of real estate that's being developed today that's going to deliver then. And I just kind of wonder
It's going to stay high then? Is that what the.
if rates don't come down right now, I mean, if you read like the earnings calls of any of these REITs, they're just it's supply, 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 supply. Well, I mean, that's a product of the zero interest rate environment of 2 years ago, 3 years ago, right? Because you're building huge buildings. So rates stay higher. I don't know. I mean, I kind of wonder what shelter looks like in 3 years. I can't help but think if you think rents are high now, they may go a lot higher.
The rent's
Yeah.
too damn high already.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting because I don't know how you're going to get. Maybe we don't need more housing. I mean, maybe that's the answer, but I don't know that I don't think housing starts look very good, but maybe I'm wrong.
Good answer here from Adam Jones. He says Powell gave the answer in 60 minutes. He'll protect against recession at the risk of high inflation.
Yeah, well, but we're not like there yet.
No.
I mean, that would be Well, I guess I don't know that that would be my answer.
I mean, that kind of talk to me sounds like subprime is contained and permanent new high plateau. Like to think that, well, we could just control all this very easily.
But I think what he's saying is that even though inflation is running hot and they're going to keep rates up, the moment that there's any kind of crack, they'll cut to zero.
Well, certainly the market feels like it's kind of sussed that out, or at least leaning that way, huh?
Less the
He's
market's
also
saying it's going to
saying
start to
that,
cut.
but he's also saying that after a period where I think he possibly deservedly can take a little bit of a victory lap on squashing inflation. So I don't know. We'll see.
Was
I
it
get,
him
I guess what
or
I'm
was
really
it?
saying is it's easy to say that now, and I understand why maybe he would say that, but what if all this fiscal spending actually has an inflationary problem, even in some sort of recession? I don't know the answer to this
You
question.
guys talk macro.
I know. This is a never-ending just.
Well, it bothers me that the country's being run like a leverage buyout. And this is like this old Charlie Munger, show me where I'm going to go to die so I don't go there. This is like one of those things that I think I don't know that we need to push it so far to figure out where the problem point is.
Yes, I agree with that. And they were talking at the 2000 meeting about borrowing money as a country, and what does that mean, and what do you do with that money? And it really does matter what you do with it. Like they were saying, and when I say they, I mean Buffett and Munger in the Berkshire AGM, if I wasn't clear before, that if you're borrowing to like spend money on infrastructure that's going to create the ability to run a society at a much higher level for 30 years, like that might make sense. Like there's sort of this, I think there's not all Keynesian deployment is the same. Like what you do with the money matters too. But if it's all just for like consumption, or to buy like, stuff you're gonna throw in the garbage in a month from China or whatever, like maybe that doesn't pencil out from a societal deployment of resources. And so I think maybe we're doing ourselves a disservice not to like differentiate a little bit more as to like what are we spending money on.
We haven't even hit the wave of entitlements. And this is like the old look, you could take a turn of leverage. You can take two turns of leverage. You could probably take three turns of leverage. Probably take four. I don't know. There's comes a point
Yeah,
where
and you're like,
more
wait,
is not
sorry,
great.
it was three. We overshot. We
Yeah.
found out the hard way.
So I don't know. I hope it's all under control. It'd be good for us all if it is.
Such a bummer that they found that hard-coded sell in that Ken Rogoff thing where he'd said that higher interest rates at some point, I mean, sorry, higher debt loads at some point, higher government debt loads are bad, which just seems like
Well, that's
axiomatic,
just
like
common sense,
obvious.
isn't it?
Yes, obvious. But then that's anti kind of Krugman's worldview. So they found the hard-coded sell in there, so they just said none of this. No, it's just
Doesn't
this.
count.
It doesn't count. Yeah.
Well, when you don't have much debt, Krugman's point of view, where you could take more, okay.
It's true.
Like, yeah,
Yeah.
you're right. Well, I don't know that you want to mess around with finding the edge of this.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I'm a little worried that we've all sort of said, oh, the edge doesn't matter.
But it just hasn't yet.
But
We
that's the
haven't found it
point.
yet.
It
We haven't
never
found it yet
does until it does.
until it does. Mr. Ocean, Old Ocean, Texas, and Fort Lauderdale. What's up? Giving everybody a shout out today.
Could you imagine though if we had a complete like 180 from the existing sort of stance of like, well, it doesn't really matter. What if the US was actually like a bastion of like, we're going to have a very sound currency. We're going to help facilitate trade around the world. We're going to use our Navy to make sure that trade happens freely. I mean, really, in a lot of ways, it's sort of like the Marshall Plan over again. But imagine if
You don't
that
think we're
we had
that
the
now?
discipline. I don't know,
I
man.
think we're
Like,
that now. I just think we're teetering on fucking it up.
yeah.
I mean,
I don't feel
everyone
like
that's
that's the
imperial.
ethos from our leadership is not of we need to set a good example monetarily, fiscally, and we're going to be like a very good neighbor about these kinds of things. We're not going to create this. I mean, we've exported a lot of inflation all over the world, and we're abusing our monetary reserve currency status, I think. And you can only do that for so long.
Yeah, you need a good military. That you need.
You will take these pieces of paper.
That's correct. I
Let's do
All right, enough macro bullshit.
Einhorn is Finkel. Einhorn. Did you guys listen to Einhorn?
Yeah, I listen to Einhorn.
Einhorn says the market is broken. Passive has broken the market.
I'll tell you what pisses me off about Einhorn, and I say this as someone who does not deserve to have this opinion. But when I listen to his argument, it sounds a lot like I used to be better at the Keynesian beauty contest than everybody else. And now I've found religion. And if I buy businesses that are returning capital to me, that's how I'm going to win. And I just don't understand why he didn't start there. But he's also David Einhorn, and I'm me. So I don't know that I understand, like, I can't flip it to people anymore. So therefore, market structure is messed up. I more understand, like, I now, because market structure is messed up, I look for C Corp conversions. They're going to have index buying. I look for index inclusion that I can flip it to somebody. I buy cheap stocks that are flipping momentum because algos are just going to buy it. Like, that to me is makes some sense. But to buy cheap stocks that are returning capital is kind of just like owning businesses. That's like Buffett 101, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like the where's my greater fool re-rating? You're not doing that anymore for me.
Yeah, and he's complaining that that's gone away. And it's kind of like, well, maybe the greater fool has just been killed.
Where are all these
Wouldn't.
dentists that were supposed to take this off my hands at an unreasonable price?
Wouldn't passive breaking the market be the best thing ever for value investors? This is what I'd understand. The first time I heard Michael Green's argument, I just thought, if this is true, this is the best thing ever. If all the money rushes to the big end of town.
Depends when. That's exactly
What
right.
do you mean?
What's
Why?
the question? What's the conversation that we're really having here? Because I think this is important. Is it, do I want to make the most money in a forward return basis, or is it, do I have to justify to outside investors why the S&P is kicking my ass?
Yeah.
Because I think that's a different question.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's the best market for, like, the fact that value's so beaten while the rest of the market is expensive is great. That's a gift, particularly if some of these companies are buying back stock. I don't need the return of capital, but like, concentrate the value. Let's go.
Yeah, it's flows versus fundamentals. It's voting machine via flows, momentum versus weighing machine eventually. And if it takes longer, that's just kind of the price that you have to pay for this new world. But I agree, it seems like the disconnection there should create extreme valuation opportunities to take advantage for the discerning buyer who is actually like looking at businesses and the quality of the business.
That should be
I
good.
mean, I was looking at the S&P, and I guess somebody said it's trading at like a 2.8% current free cash flow multiple or something like that. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, if I want to preserve wealth, I got a 10-year duration, I can take the S&P or the 10-year. That's going to give me four, and I've got to take on the some of the currency things that we've identified. Maybe the S&P gives me some earnings power. Should it re-rate down? I need to know the scenario that it does, but the companies, if they can protect some of their earnings power, are buying in shares. So, like, over time, I think that 2.8% will grow. Well, if I can like talk myself into why that's rational here, I'm sure you can just extend it and say, well, at 1.4% it works. That's up 100%. Like, I don't know that value outperforms that re-rating. At some point over the future, you would think your entry free cash flow yield should matter. So, like, yeah, I think, there's this company I follow, OEC. If people want to take a look and tell me why it's stupid, let me know. But they're guiding to like 500 million in mid-cycle cash flow. It's a two
$2 billion company, makes rubber black. Like it's terrible into like it like a not a terrible industry, but it's not something
Boring.
people are going to enter. You know, I don't know. The S&P probably kicks its ass for a while. Eventually, I think that's like that payoff. But you got
But
to own them.
you can't control the multiple, right? You can't control the multiple re-rating either for your own stocks or for the rest of the market. So there's no point worrying about it. What you can control is how much value you get when you buy. And the value that you get is the yield plus the reinvestment rate. You don't need multiple re-rating. It's nice if you get it. And I would like some. I don't like the headwind all the time. I'd like a tailwind, but you can make money just on the yield and the reinvestment. And you know, even if you get a little bit of a headwind, then over time, eventually, it all works out. I think that's exactly what Einhorn's saying. I don't think he's actually complaining too much. I think he's saying you can't. He's just saying you don't think about it in terms of getting the don't buy something that's cheap relative to the index, expecting it to catch up to the index. Buy it because it's genuinely undervalued, and you're getting a return at the moment that you buy it. But I think
Yeah.
that he keeps on coming out and saying it, and it sounds like he's complaining a little bit. I don't
Sounds
think
like
he is.
the Fed ate my homework.
Yeah, it does.
It just sounds a lot to me like we used to identify opportunities before the market saw them and we'd flip them to people who probably underperformed, right? If he's outperforming doing it, they're probably underperforming. He's doing it, he was doing it during a time when the S&P went on an insane run. And like
Where the value factor went on, value went on the same run.
well, but I'm saying the last 10 years that he's saying that things are broken. I mean, a lot of those people that were buying this stuff from him, like I don't know, they weren't doing it in a tax advantage wrapper. A lot of them were like old school, you know, shops. I mean, I don't know, those people going away, is that the market broken or is that just kind of capital markets iterating? I think the advent of ETFs to do some of this stuff makes a ton of sense to put a lot of pressure on those people that probably would be buying that. Do I think value ETFs existing have distorted market structure? No, I don't. So I
I
just
think
don't know.
there's a little bit of exogenous things happening too there, where you have the perhaps adverse selection bias of PE kind of sucking out maybe the better companies potentially. I mean, we've seen some measurements of like the Russell 2000's business quality has deteriorated, so that might be PE driven. And then secondly, you have big pools of capital who have looked for liquidity in places to meet their private investment obligations, capital calls in PE and VC. And where do they get the money from? Well, let's sell these, you know, this dog, or let's redeem this dog manager. And it tended to be probably the on the more value end of the spectrum over the last 10 years. And you have this sort of reinforcing momentum of that, where this guy stinks now, he doesn't know what he's doing. Let's redeem from him. He has to sell those stocks. They go down. It just drags in other value investors that might have held it as well. And then you kind of get these feedback circular, self-reinforcing loops that can go on for longer than you would probably hope as a manager who's trying to just be rational.
He
I mean,
doesn't seem
you.
to have a lot of impact on the Russell 2000. If anything, they're at the low end of the Russell 2000, the small end, rather. Russell 2000's quality, I think, is largely driven by, when the market gets, when it's easy to raise money, you get a lot of the biotechs and the, the
Yeah.
things that they don't have any revenue. They've just,
Crap comes public.
yeah.
The ducks are quacking. You got to feed the ducks.
I think that's what it looks like now. And there's a good question here, which we come to in a bit, but. The question is, do you think that it's germane to this one from Tyler again. Do you think the underperformance of the value factor in the recent past is partly explained by ZIRP and bailouts preventing consolidation of industries from low return on invested capital firms to high return on invested capital firms? I do, a little bit. Japan had this problem where they had these zombie companies that they just never declared bankruptcy. They were able to stumble from, there's
Failure
enough
to
like.
failure.
Yeah, with no lack of enthusiasm, no loss of enthusiasm.
What's the definition of value?
Yeah, well, we're not defining it for these purposes. You submit your own low PB.
Yeah, low PB is tough because some of the best firms in the world have no B, right? So,
For sure.
Even cigarette companies have no B, right? They just bought it all in.
Yeah.
So you almost have to do like a price to assets on some of those businesses.
Or add a bunch of leverage that can take your book value to nothing.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, like Green Brick has worked great and the stock has worked as the business has worked. It doesn't seem like a broken market. But he's a lot smarter than I am.
Yes.
All right. Let me throw out another one. Tyler's got a couple of good ones here.
It's on fire today.
Yeah. Do you guys think the value factor will perform better with a period of sustained higher rates?
It's above my pay grade, Toby. You take this one.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It doesn't really make sense that higher rates should help equities. But I think that if you're higher rates certainly hurt firms that have got back-ended cash flows, so the growthier stuff that isn't doing anything now and things that are highly levered, which might be, you could maybe say value firms tend to be more highly levered. I don't know. It's hard. It's, you know, that the Buffett said following the last big period of inflation, whether it was 70s or 80s or something like that, that he would have rather been in the asset light businesses that had pricing power than in, you know, the received wisdom. The common wisdom was that you want to be in the asset intensive stuff because the assets go up in value, ignoring the fact that you have to periodically replace the assets, which means that you've got to stump up, you've got to find the money to buy them at a higher price than you bought them previously. And so you might earn money on your assets for a period of time, but then it's sort of, it's illusory because when you go to buy, you got to pay more. It's a tough one.
Right.
Certainly low rates didn't help, but let's try high rates and see what happens.
Well, look, I think like to the extent that rates would cool the labor market and to the extent that labor runs through value firms' income statements, I think it could help. Like I noticed Met Coal is in some value screens. Met Coal seems to me to be a big beneficiary of fiscal stimulus. If rates stay high, I could see an argument why you wouldn't build more sort of facilities and you may not expand your operations. So I think that the combination of fiscal spending and high rates could help some of these value stocks a lot because I think it may restrict supply from coming on.
Well, coal's had a pretty good run over the last 12 months.
Yeah. But I'm thinking the same thing. I kind of have this theory that high rates might actually create inflation. And I think it's because it may reduce aggregate supply. And I think that may help value, but maybe not.
What about giving, you know, all these savers a little bit more spending power too? And like, you know, grandma's savings account now gives her four before that she can go buy things with that she wasn't when it was at zero.
Yeah. It depends a little bit on the composition of the economy. Like if it's mostly net savers, versus, I mean, maybe that doesn't work out. Maybe you have to have maybe the savings has to equal the borrowings. I don't know.
I think the composition of the economy is maybe one reason to be a little less scared of oil than we were in the 70s, right?
It's not as
oil going higher will actually do wonders for Texas, which was not historically the case. It didn't used to bring much money into the U.S. economy. Now it could.
Yeah, and the sensitivity to oil, the oil, what's the word? Amount of oil concentration required to run the economy has come down quite a bit. Just efficiencies, more service than heavy labor or heavy production.
EVs
saving the
day. I'm not sure that applies here, but sort of.
Energy intensity? Maybe that was the word I was looking for. Intensity.
Yeah. I remember when you did that segment. I was actually on that show or I was watching.
I don't remember.
I think I was here.
I blacked out.
What if it helps commodities? And value tends to be concentrated more in commodities.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't hit the income statement, right? As long as it doesn't impact your costs more than your revenue. There's the easy answer.
Yeah. Well, if you're selling them, you're okay, but yeah.
Which as long as you're not buying new machines, right? If the capital is already in the ground and the price goes up and you don't have to put a bunch of maintenance capex in, then yeah, it should work.
I think it's a chart crime. I don't know exactly why it's a chart crime, but it always gets pulled up by the guys who call out the chart crimes. But the comparison of like the S&P 500 to a basket of commodities, that relationship, you know, in 2000, it was stretched the way it is now in favor of equities over commodities. In 2010 or whatever, or the other, to 2020, it was stretched in the other direction, and it's still sort of stretched that way. So it's like a, you're better off buying commodities rather than equities here.
Yeah.
Would you say, though, that one is a bet against human ingenuity and the other one is a bet for human ingenuity?
Over the long run, you want to be for human ingenuity. Yeah, so that might be why it's a chart crime. It's not a mean reverting series. There's a drift. We're certainly... Yes.
The not stationarity in the data.
Energy... intensity is just one. I mean, probably find the intensity of all of
metal,
everything is, we're using less of it, we're more efficient.
Digitization removes a lot of material out of your economy.
I operate mostly a paperless office. Like that was a big deal at one point. We're going to be a paperless office.
I can't function without paper. I am a straight up boomer.
I hate when I have to print something out.
Oh, it's the worst. Shall we do some vegetables?
Yeah, let's do some veggies. Top of the hour. Let's do it.
What do veggies cost these days? It's a lot.
They're kind of expensive, yeah, surprisingly. Given that
has it taken you longer to do veggie segments with inflation or not so much? Does that not apply?
You know, there's a little bit of it's inflation. It's just purely ego, I think. The
input cost is low relative to the what he sells them for. Good margins.
Productivity increased.
You know what it is there's diminishing marginal utility from them as I scrape the bottom of the barrel for ideas.
But, yeah, you're learning about the oil industry. You've mined your good wells first.
Yeah, I'm definitely.
I don't know. That's not true. You come up with good stuff. So let's get it.
Let's get it. This is called The Farmer's Fable. And it's a story about a farmer named Bill. And in a good season, he'll harvest 150 seeds for every 100 seeds that he plants. So it's a 50% growth rate. Not bad. And if Bill plants these seeds every year, this business will grow exponentially. But alas, farming is not so easy. And sometimes there's a bad harvest. And when that happens, Bill only gets 70% of his original seed count. So it's a 30% loss. So where Bill lives in Florida, you know, it's random.
You should have given me a trigger warning, sir.
I'm not going to. I wanted to get you off your, like, on tilt here. So where he lives in Florida, it's a random coin flip between a good season and a bad season. So we're still looking at like a pretty good bet with a positive expected outcome. It's, you know, half the time it's plus 50%. The other half of the time it's minus 30%. On average, we can expect a 10% outcome. And Bill has an edge here. Given all this, we could run simulations on what Bill might expect to happen over the next 100 years of his farming. And in the first run that I did of this, Bill fared pretty well. Things started choppy, you know, good season, bad season, back and forth. But then he had a run of good luck, and he ended up with over 100x his original seed count. He's the man. And then the next time I ran it, he started with a run of bad luck, and he lost 90% of his seeds before bouncing back and finishing with 10 times the original amount after 100 years.
He didn't stick with it. No. That bill blew out at the bottom after a 90% drawdown. Started selling himself on the corner.
He did.
Went broke.
And the next time I ran it, Bill started hot, but then he hit a rough patch, lost his confidence, and he finished with actually less than he started with, which is bad luck. And so even with an average of a 10% expected return, Bill ended up with 100x in the first scenario, 10x in the next, and then a loss in the last one. So there's a lot of luck involved here. And so maybe farming maybe isn't as good a business if it's so random, right? But here's where things start to get interesting. Bill has this friend named Toby, and he's also a farmer. And they happen to live on opposite sides of the country from each other, so their weather is completely unrelated. And it's random who will have a good year and who will have a bad year. So let's run another 100-year simulation with both Bill and Toby farming alone. This time, Bill ends up with a relatively lucky outcome, and he has 16 times his original seeds. And Toby's unlucky, and he ends up at just barely break even. So maybe Toby is a bad farmer. I don't know. However, what if these friends decide to make a deal? And at the end of every season, Bill and Toby agree to pool their harvest and then split it equally. So here's a little of the math behind it, and it's actually quite counterintuitive. So I would urge you, if you're listening to this, to go to farmersfable.org, which is where I got this from, and click through the little animations that it has. And that's fable with an F, right? It's not table. Click through the animations yourself to follow along. And honestly, like, I've had to run this multiple times before it really made sense to me. It's that counterintuitive. But eventually, I've kind of started to wrap my mind around it. And it, honestly, it's a like kind of blows your mind a little bit. And so that's why I'm sharing it with you guys now. So I'll try my best here to keep it simple of what's going on. But so imagine that Toby starts with we're going to change it to like one bundle of wheat, okay? And in the first harvest, it's a great year, and Toby triples his bundle to three. All right, awesome, right? Then he has a second harvest, but it's not so good, and he merely breaks even. So Toby finishes after 2 years with three bundles of wheat. All right, we're following along so far. At the same time, running along with this, Bill also starts with one bundle of wheat. He breaks even in his first year and then triples in his second. So both Bill and Toby started with one bundle and finished with three after two runs of the simulation, right? Simple enough. Now let's imagine that they pooled and shared, and it's the exact same weather patterns held over this. Just like in the first example, in the first year, Toby finished with three and Bill finished with one. Okay. But before we move to the second season to run it, they pool their bundles and then split them up. So three plus one totals to four. They split it and they each have two for the next harvest season. In this next season, Toby breaks even and keeps his two. Bill triples his two, and which then takes him to six. Okay. What a stud. They pool again and split it, and this time it's six plus two equals eight. So they split it in half, and now they arrive at each at four bundles. So that's one more each than when they were farming by themselves. So there's actually this like free lunch that occurs from diversification and pooling, and that's maybe what everyone's been talking about when they talk about this free lunch. So anything that grows exponentially like this in a multiplicative series, there's an advantage to sharing and. It pays to redistribute after each step moving forward because you only take a partial step backwards when you share. And so this like luck then becomes what was a like luck becomes more of a certainty over the long run with this pooling and sharing. And so you're actually interestingly reducing risk and increasing the growth for everyone involved because it's reducing the fluctuations, right? It's this variance strain that we've talked about. And you know, you can even There's actually ways you can demonstrate this mathematically that someone who is objectively better farmer than the person that they're pooling with will benefit from a pooling arrangement. Although there are some limits to it, right? Like you can't if I was paired up with Warren Buffett of farming and then I was like, you know, totally dead weight for them, that would not be a good arrangement. But there is a allowance for a little bit of delta there. So it really shows you the importance of going. Of avoiding those big downs that the variance drain as much as possible, which of course is why probably Buffett has rule number one is don't lose money, right? So, and this whole farmer's fable was inspired by a 2019 research paper from Ole Peters and Alexander Adamo, I believe is how it said, called An Evolutionary Advantage of Cooperation. If you wanted to like read the more scientific treatment of it, but they're basically able to prove that, this cooperative transactions in a multiplicative series where you have to like multiply things out like geometrically, there's a real advantage to be had for pooling arrangements. So I find that to be very interesting. And if you click through that farmersfable.org, it'll help do a better job of what I just, you know, said in a orally, which is, you know, not as good of a way of teaching this as probably looking at little bundles of wheat.
Yeah, good call. Tyler Ferris got there again with Shannon's demon before he got very far into that story again.
Correct.
Shannon's demon is a great example of that, which is why you want the uncorrelated or anti-correlated. Ray Dalio says get 10 uncorrelated series. That's a good way of doing it if you can find them.
Yes, that diversification of being able to limit the downside, and which allows you to catch that bigger upside with a larger pool of capital.
Evidently, we've crashed farmersfable.org. That we dozens of people went there at once. Couldn't
Uh-oh.
handle the load.
Shit, I didn't think about that. Sorry,
Why roll-up math makes sense. You add some
guys.
things across,
Diversification.
you get geographic diversification, it's actually worth more.
Interesting. I haven't
Do
thought about
roll-ups
it.
ever work?
Some. I don't know that the base rates are great.
What goes wrong there?
I don't know. I suspect if you were to study it, that you'd probably find incentives are squarely in the middle, and you probably have to be fairly decentralized to do them really well. I would think. I
When
haven't
they're
done a good roll-up study, despite wanting to.
thematic, they start with lots of little ones, and then they get to move the needle, they get bigger and bigger. So their biggest mistake is always, or the mistake that they finally make is always the biggest mistake they make. The ones that do well are like, Constellation or
Keep it
Berkshire or,
small.
Used to be 3G, but
Ooh.
well, Valiant. Remember Valiant?
Yeah, that was a roll up.
I'm always
Probably
nervous of
gotta
roll-ups.
imagine some overconfidence creeps in when you've done a bunch of small ones. You're like, hey, we're pretty good at this. Let's take a bigger bite of the apple, and then you get clobbered.
Yeah, you start believing that you're actually worth the multiple that people are giving you and get a little bit of a god complex. I can see that.
Constellation's managed to keep their acquisition size incredibly small. Yeah.
Unbelievably small. I can't, like, I almost don't believe them. It's so impressive.
It's distributed acquisitions all the way to the edge of the network rather
Yeah.
than having to rely on the dude in the middle coming up with all of the ideas. It's a good way of doing it.
Yeah, you need the right kind of leader in that, right? Like, that's a guy that I suspect doesn't require all the attention.
And maybe the opposite is trying to avoid all the attention.
Yeah. Could be something to learn there.
Stay off podcasts.
That's definitely.
Or keep your podcast very small.
Yeah,
Niche podcast.
that's why we're doing it. That's why we keep it small and intimate.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to do predictions for 2024?
Haven't we already
Just,
done those?
yeah, but I just mean generally. What's going to happen?
Oh,
Gosh.
God. I don't know.
Can you just beat me with a stick instead, Toby, and we'll just call it even?
I certainly can.
Thank you.
Next time I see it, Danaher. There's a good roll up. Big sell off today because we got a hot CPI print. Does that make sense? Market looking for a reason to sell off.
I don't know. Lots of people seem to be commenting on the Twitter machine, for whatever that's worth, that things are really heated. I just think that some of these like just middle of the road old economy businesses don't seem crazy to me. And I bet if you own them, you do okay. Maybe you got to live through a little bit of a recession in the meantime, but like the prices aren't indicating euphoria, at least as I see it. But then again, who the hell knows? I could be blind.
Kind of multiples are you seeing?
Well, I mean, like what OEC, I mean, look, you got it. They have to bring this LaPorte plant on, but I mean, what, 4x forward EBITDA in 2025? Like, that's not crazy. Okay, how much is D&A? Call it maybe, I don't know, 90 million or so. Let's say 500 million is 300 million in free cash to equity. You're 2x levered, and I mean, obviously it's a commodity, so who the hell knows what's actually bankable, but you're looking at equity
value of 1.3 billion. I don't know, 4.5 times free cash. Maybe that's peak. So maybe it's 100 million. Okay, well then you're 13 times cash. Last I checked, that's still like 7% return.
Right.
You gotta own it though. I mean, you know, if a cycle goes against you and you puke it at the bottom, you're screwed.
I do
Oh,
think it
look, I
would
just
just
described Charter for me. No, I kid. I puked it a little higher, but
I do think it is all but impossible to time these kinds of things. You really don't know when the worm will turn, I don't think.
so I think like
Let me try to
really
make it
owning it.
more concrete. Do you think you could have timed the 2000 to 2007 value renaissance?
No. But I do think at some point the valuation spread does get a little too big where it's like value probably does well. I think the harder question is after it does well, I don't know when I'd sell it. But
You got to surf that wave all the way to the beach, Billy. I don't
Yeah.
know what that means. I just like
You mean
saying it. It sounds really
crash it
good.
onto the rocks? Is that what you're...
Dig that nose into the sand at the bottom. Fairfax short report.
Yeah, that's interesting, huh? Any thoughts on that?
Seemed like a funny, I mean,
All the things in the out there that might be Fugazi and you're going after Fairfax? Okay.
Well, they have a historically people that know insurance, some have had some questions about their underwriting, I think. If you believe publicly reported data, I think those questions, I mean, I was just looking at it, what, like their last 10 years of combined ratio is like 97 or so, or 96. Seems like they could be worse than that. Then what? You've got acquisition accounting, and you've got a stock that's been on a hell of a run. So if you wanted to scare people, I think it could make some sense to write a report like that, and you get some shakeout, and then you close your short, and then you move on.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of publicly shorting, man. I mean, especially Prem. Like, I think Prem has come after people in the past, and I think he would not be afraid to do it again if you did not have pure motivations. I think you better be fucking right on your analysis if you come after a guy like Prem.
My interpretation of Muddy Waters' complaints were mostly like, we don't like the way IFRS accounts for things. It's like, well, yeah, fine. I mean, you don't like the way that it was marked to market for something, like say like Digit, for instance. Well, that was like a what Sequoia led that round, and that was the price that they marked the equity at. Like, I mean, what do you want them to do? Like, that's just sort of how it works. Like, make your own adjustments. Like, no one's saying accounting gives you the exact answer. Like, these are all just abstract approximations of reality at the end of the day. You need to make your own adjustments, but that doesn't mean that it's fraud. So I don't know. I found it rather unconvincing myself, but
The question that I had, by the way, is I believe that Prem sued Roddy Boyd. If
oh
I could
yeah.
be wrong. I
There were
believe
a
that
lot
that's the
of there was a
rumor.
big short interest in what was like 2005, 6 time frame for Fairfax, if I remember right.
Yeah, I may be wrong on that, but I'm just saying, like, you know, he seems like they released the response. They released a response to the response. You know, I actually talked this weekend to a guy who was a short seller who found himself the subject of an investigation. And, you know, his side of the story is he was just doing good work. And, you know, he wrote a public short report. And the amount of heat that came on him, you know, even if you're right, the legal bills are a lot. I don't understand the risk reward skew. The only way it makes sense is if you're running a firm and you want to attract assets and you think it's worth all the headache. But man, being public and short would, I commend the guys that do good work and do it. It doesn't sound like a fun existence. Sounds like even when you're right, you can put yourself through hell.
Oh God, the Einhorn book, entire book about shorting Allied was like, would if you read that before you ever even think that you might want to do it, because that probably scare you straight.
All right. Here's a good question, riffing on Buffett's chat. What do you think some of the few companies are going to be better businesses and earning more 5 years from now with 90% confidence? That's from Tyler Farris, our fourth, our producer. Tyler Farris is responsible for 90% of this episode. Thanks,
Jeez.
Tyler.
Yeah, it's interesting. That came from, I think, Todd Combs talking about what him and Buffett talk about on Saturday afternoons. And they're basically mostly just talking about businesses that fit that criteria. Is that a correct?
Yeah, do we have a price on this? Are we limited to the 15 times earnings thing?
Yeah, that makes it a little harder, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There wasn't a limit on this, so I guess you can swing away.
Anything.
What about Mag 7?
I don't think I'd bet against it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was true. All of the big growthy companies from 2000, like they all compounded away from 2000 to 2015. Price didn't go anywhere, but the businesses certainly got bigger over that period.
This isn't a unique thought given where it trades, but I think the one that would make me the most nervous is Google. I
That
just don't
AI
know.
related
Yeah, and
search.
I don't even know that it's like AI. It's just like they've made so much money for so long that I just wonder if something were to compete with their economics, do they even have the muscle to learn how to pivot? It's like first
Shots fired.
generation makes it, second generation spends it, third generation's got
Shirt
nothing again.
sleeves to
Like, what
shirt
generation are
sleeves
we
and
in? I don't
three
know.
generations. It's been interesting to watch, Meta when it was smashed like a year ago, 18 months ago, whatever was the bottom. It was like half Google on my. I have this little screen on the Acquirers Multiple website with the little bubbles, and Meta was half Google for a while, and now it's more expensive than Google.
Zuck, that's because Zuck went. He's like, time to get hardcore.
Yeah, well, you got
Sucks
lap
out there
comp slap and all. I
doing
don't
the
know.
jujitsu and massaging his cows and feeding him macadamia nuts and beer. I want to be one of Zuck's cows.
Copied TikTok, figured that out pretty nicely.
Pay himself a big fat dividend, live in a bunker in Hawaii. He's got to figure that out,
Yeah.
Dad.
How come Zuck's not demanding 25% of the company be given to him?
Oh, I actually think that this is, I'm actually sort of on Team Elon here.
All right, break that down for me.
All right. So, to the extent that you are would be a shareholder, right? So you're already signed up on Team Elon. Like, he wants to build a robotics company. He is building a robotics company. He refers to it as a robotics company. But I think out of all the people that are actually like kind of worried about artificial intelligence, I actually kind of like resonate the most with what he says. And I kind of see if I were him being like, look, if I'm going to unleash this beast, I want to control where it goes. I don't think that that's necessarily.
If anybody's going to make the monster that destroys humanity, it's going to be me. It's not going to be somebody else.
Yes. And you don't have to say that it can be him, by the way, right? Like, that's fine. If you say, no, it's not you or it's not in this entity,
Let's get that
then.
AI into some of those bots, give them guns. Let's see what happens.
Well, I mean, look, I think he thinks he wouldn't, but I
T2
don't
was a
mind the
great
man
movie.
asking. We'll see.
Well, he got approved by the shareholders for the last slug. So the people who really count voted for it. And then the court said no.
Yeah, well, it could be not. It could just be voting shares. It doesn't even have to be the economics. I don't understand. I need to realize why the court said no. That doesn't seem American to me on its face. I feel like if shareholders are going to give you that much money, they should be allowed to.
Yeah.
It's a big shareholder base. It's
Yeah,
a lot
it's
of
not.
people in there, a lot of sophisticated investors.
Christ, it turns over a million times a year, too. So whoever just rented it most recently.
Hey man, don't hate the player, hate the game. That said, I don't like his securities fraud or my perception of it. That has always bothered me and always will. He's a complicated figure. I think he'd be good to do without the means in his life. The dopamine and the ketamine, I think he could get off of.
It's probably fair for all of us.
I've tried to reduce the dopamine.
Maybe
I'm in a better
prescriptive.
Spot.
All right, fellas. That's 200 episodes in the bag.
Wow. Congrats, boys. I'm proud of you.
Well done. Thanks, everybody, for sticking with us. Happy Valentine's for tomorrow. Play this for your significant other. Show them how much you love them.
I remember when I got my dog and she was a puppy on this show. She's now 80 pounds and sleeping. Just a fat beauty.
She learned
see you next
from
week,
watching
folks.
You.
Hey, now.